Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Hey everybody, thanks to all of you that joined us at Enseca in Richmond this March. We really enjoyed our time there, and also big thank you to Enseca for co-producing the recording and everybody that helped make it possible. So that included Ben Carter, as well as Cole Collier for helping do the sound recording, and all of those audience members that joined us for our talk. Thank you so much, and we hope to see you in 2025.
Yeah, and just so you know, next year, Enseca is accepting submissions for the podcast room. If you would like to submit a proposal for the podcast room, you need to do so by Thursday, May 2nd. All the podcasts are recorded live for a 60-minute engaging and thought-provoking conversation between two or three podcast panelists and one moderator. Podcast presentations focus on thematic discussions that encourage audience feedback and participation. So if you wanted to apply for that proposal, you're more than welcome to do it on Enseca's website by Thursday, May 2nd, 2024.
Can you turn me up a little bit? Welcome to the Enseca podcast room. How many of you went to earlier recordings? Okay, great. So you're back. Thanks for coming back. This is an initiative that we started last year in Cincinnati, and we hope to continue for years going forward. So if you like having lab tapings of podcasts, please tell a board member or an Enseca staff member that you really enjoy this process. Because this is a live recording, we want you to try to be as quiet as possible out in the audience so we can hear Beck and Ryan talk about.
Don't heckle us, please. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
But we're going to get to the heckling in the second part of the show. And if you want to heckle, I'll run around and hand you a mic to heckle them.
Heckle and answer.
Yeah, exactly. But in all seriousness, there's going to be Q&A. So if you raise your hand, I will run you the mic. We do want your voice, though, on the recording, so don't just yell out a question. We want to have all of this be recorded for posterity. I also wanted to thank y'all for being a part of this, because you're one of our two-timers.
Thank you, Ben. This was awesome.
We love it.
We're
we
so grateful.
Yeah, we are. Well, we love the free ticket.
Seriously, I mean, you manage all of the behind-the-scenes stuff with Enseca, and then they send us an email, and we're like, okay, here's your topic. All right, yeah. We can roll with that. We got it.
We can go.
Yeah. Well, what you can tell is that they're game for anything, and that's what we want. Going forward, we're going to be accepting submissions for podcast topics and even having groups of people propose a topic together and essentially be matched with a podcast host. So that you can come up and be a part of this process.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Like a live interview,
sort of. So that'll be the entry for that, I think, will be in early May. So look for that on the Enseca website. That's enseca.org.com, one of the Enseca websites that you all obviously use to register to get here. So without further ado, we'll talk.
Ooh, thanks, Ben. Awesome. Yeah, when Ben was inviting us, it was like, yes, I'm definitely going to do this.
Yes.
Becca would not be here if we weren't doing this. So.
Right.
It was a long travel. So
listen, if I'm not getting a free ticket here and if I don't have to be here, I'm not coming. So I'm sorry.
We
I love
are
all
here.
You guys.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ben. All right.
We should introduce ourselves.
Yes, we should. All right. We don't want to assume everyone knows who we are. So I'll introduce myself. I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And I'm Becca Otis, and I live in a van.
From Five Lines Pottery.
Oh, but I'm from Five Lines Pottery.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Yeah, so I've been straddling part-time pottery, but also it's like really a second full-time job since 2013, I guess. Since I graduated college, I do a tech job in UX engineering, which is like web development stuff. And then I've been doing the pottery business and growing it little by little since that time. And I'm just very driven to do it full time someday. I've do a lot of art shows and things like that. I've had a studio assistant for a number of years. Erica's right there. She's my studio assistant for the last couple of years.
She's awesome.
She's amazing. And that's my story. I'd love to do it full-time someday when it's right. Usually I say these days it's like when I have enough job satisfaction dips from my full-time job, because it's really hard to walk away from a really great salary and benefits, and my managers and everything are very flexible and they understand and they know that I can leave if I want, but they're happy to have me and want to keep me as long as possible. So it's hard to leave that.
And we support full-time people doing a part-time hobby, because you got to live your life in the best way possible.
Yeah, it's very challenging.
Yeah.
So that's me.
That's you. And I'm Becca, and I have been doing pottery since, well, I've been doing pottery since I was a sophomore in college. And then I have been doing it, selling it full time since 2014. College, I don't remember the year of that. I think it was 2009. And so I have had a storefront, in Washington, a community studio. I've been doing it. This has been my primary business. Like, I've never had part-time gigs. Once I had a part-time gig when my tent blew over. But like, I've never really had a part-time gig, for this whole time. I am poor and I, love it kind of. And I, but now I live in a van and I actually travel and do my stuff at different studios out of that van. I have a wheel, a kiln, and a slab roller in the van, so I can do everything that I need to. I've started making more jewelry going forward just because I like it more. And as we discussed beforehand, I've been kind of like delving into board games, so doing that. And
you're very go with the flow and just like, yeah. You know, she can have an idea that she's like, I'm done with this forever.
Yeah.
And then, like, it resurrects itself 9 months later. Like, you never know with Becca.
I like, fail a lot. Like, that's very important to know that I am, like, one of those people that will think that I'm going to do really great, and then no money comes of it. And so I'm like, great, got to turn now. Yeah. I have to figure out how to make money now, you know. So that's pretty much me. And I always say that if you have never listened to our podcast, I'm like I am the Jar Jar Binks to his Obi-Wan Kenobi. So
and I still don't know that reference.
Yeah, he hasn't seen Star Wars, so but don't give him a bad time about it. We've done it enough.
The gasps. Oh my gosh.
But yeah, so he's kind of like, I wouldn't say he's the brains because we're equally smart, but he's more goal oriented and like
structured.
Driven and structured, and I'm more like, meh, we'll figure it out. So, yeah. What's your topic about?
So, this was going to kind of go, I was going to ask you a question that kind of goes into the one question that was, you said to me recently about, you feel like you're making the best work that you've made ever, but you're struggling with it.
I'm making the best work I've ever made in my entire life, as I should be, because I'm at the end of my entire career every day. But I hope that made sense.
Each day you're improving. Yes.
I'm making gallery quality work. I feel like I'm making gallery quality work, and I have never sold less. So,
and one of the questions was from Sarah Catherine Clay. Thank you, Sarah. Was, how do you reassure yourself when your work is not selling?
Right. All I can say is drugs. No, I'm kidding. This is not a support of drugs. I don't do drugs. But yeah, and so we were kind of talking about that in the van as we came in here. The whole topic for this entire conversation, quote unquote, from Enseca is
resources for your business.
Resources for your business. This is very vague. And I think that, you know, a Google search away is when you know, like a lot of resources are a Google search away. But what aren't a Google search away is like us talking about personal experiences and different things that you can, like, you're like, I didn't know what to do, so I did this. You know, yeah. You can't Google that. Like, there's only so many forums.
And yeah. Everybody's like, I think a lot of what we were kind of going through with in doing the podcast, we talk to a lot of different individuals that we interview, and you kind of listen all these different stories of how they found success with wholesale or, you know, they really got into a path and they didn't like it, so they changed and they pivoted and did something different. So you kind of like learn from their experiences, and we like it's helped my business significantly of like, what do I actually want to spend my time doing? What do I not want to spend my time doing? What's worth the time and investment? And like, what do I think is marketable? Because I think very business minded as well with like, you know, is it going to be sellable? If I make a bunch of stuff and I keep taking it to and from art shows and it's not selling, I'm like, I don't like, I lose the enjoyment of making that item as well. So, but like, are you,
and I'm
are
more
you
of
losing
a double,
the enjoyment of that?
I'm more of a double down type of person. So if somebody doesn't like my piece, I'm like, why? Like, you should be liking this.
Yeah.
No, I will not sell that for $75 instead of $98. So,
but
yeah.
You might, like a week later.
But
you
might
be like, you know what? Like, if you catch me at the right time. But since you asked me, can I have this for $75? You're like, no.
But yeah, so yeah. And I think that as I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, I am surrounded by people that are successful. In my life, I have so many friends that are in the business realm that are successful. Like my bestest friend is 7 years younger than I am, and he makes $100,000 a year selling cards, greeting cards. And and so like every time I go to his house, I'm like, God, what am I doing wrong? Like,
yeah.
What am I doing wrong? And I think that him and Ryan have been very helpful in quite literally resources for business, telling me like, at some points when I'm just struggling, I can't do anything. Like Andrew has done my entire Etsy page for me once, just because I was like, I don't know what to do. I can't do this.
I feel like, do you ask me for direct advice very often though?
Sometimes I don't.
I feel like it's probably subtle. You're probably yeah. Teasing, because if you ask me directly, I'm going to like ask you a million fucking questions.
That's
and
true.
You're going to get frustrated.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that, yeah, well, and I go to different friends for different advice too. And I think it's just like, I'm trying to like tie this back to resources for business. We should just talk. But,
well, it's fun about the, yeah the selling but, part, like reassuring yourself and getting like people around you that can bring you up when you need that.
When you need it. And also give you honest opinions. So like Ryan is my honest opinion guy. So if I say, I'm not doing this well, and he's like, well, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And then I have another friend who's like, okay, well, how can we fix it? And then I have another friend who's like that friend that you go to when you just want to complain to somebody for a minute. And then I have another friend that lies to me. You know? Like, says,
they
no,
you
your
up.
Shit
you
is
up.
Great. I love it. You're doing everything right. I have no idea why you're struggling.
yeah.
And I think those are all great resources for business.
You're just going to keep tagging the title in here. Yeah. And that's why you need resources for your business.
No, yeah. I mean, like, I talked to Ryan when I think when I have the mental energy to like really talk a subject out like at detail and at length, and like having the podcast has been really great for us, and having a podcast is a really great resource for a business, but you wouldn't be here if you didn't listen to the podcast. So like, we don't have to say that one, but having friends, I think actually is the biggest thing.
Yeah. People that you're probably sitting next to, or you've met here, or that you've done a pot swap with, or just something that there's like a thread between you that you can get something from, and you can build it from there. And it's a give and take. It's you always want to give more than you take, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's really draining on the people that you're asking.
Yeah. And I know people, Rebecca Graves Prowse, who was my old boss and a very good friend. She had it was a bunch of women, and it was like a power group. it was some like fancy dancy group, but they just found each other somehow, and they've all decided to make a group that helps each other in different areas because they're all in different business styles.
Yeah, you don't have to be other potters necessarily. Yeah,
they're all in different styles and they go together. They come together. They meet like once a year together, but they also have like a ongoing chat and ongoing Facebook group. And I think that, you know, we have always had this community, but not a lot of people do. You know, not a lot of people have a community. They're like, I wanted to do pottery, but I live in a town of 200 people, and that does exist, by the way. And there's nobody else. Nobody else here. And I'm just sitting here. And I think, like, Sephora from...
Sephora Ceramics.
Sephora Ceramics is doing a really good job, like, cultivating this community that you can even feel like you're part of it. Like, having workshops that are online that are accessible, that you can, if you take a class with that person, you can go back and say, hey, I took a class with you. Can I ask you another question? Like, and...
Or have you tried that? Have you run into this issue so that you're not going to the source of, like, the person that's probably bombarded with questions? And but you also paid for it, so, like, you can probably get away with some of the questions that are... Yeah. But you've also, like, given some effort into working your way toward trying it before just having very broad statements that's going to put a lot of work on them.
Right.
But you can also, go with the person that you took the class with and be like, hey, I started trying this out on slabs and this is what I've been doing. Like, are you experiencing this or have you tried it? Or
And you can intentionally make a group of your own friends or of people that don't even know each other and be like, hey, I'd like to do this. Like, people do with book clubs all the time. Why can't we have clay clubs? Right? We do it all the time. And it's just, I don't think
that's
it's,
what we were doing with Instagram Live when we were, before what, the podcast existed.
That's how we met. Like, I would do Instagram Lives. He would come on and we just like chat about different ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's how the podcast started because we wanted to chat about more things. And the more you talk to other people, the more you learn. Mm-hmm. The more you fail, the more you learn.
So how do you know who to ask for help? Because if you're a hobbyist and just getting going or, you know, you're still like a baby potter, quote unquote.
Yeah.
How do you know who to go to or, you know, who to go to? When do you need it?
I'm going to push this back on you because I think that
I always do this to you.
No, I'm doing it to you because Ryan is probably the best community builder person that I've met. I don't know how you've done it, but the reason that we know so many people is because he has little by little, what I've observed is he's little by little commented on people's photos.
Dropping breadcrumbs everywhere.
Dropping breadcrumbs, like little breadcrumbs, not coming on too
encouragement strong. Breadcrumbs, like, and also like, hey, I like, if you see something you genuinely like it, like leaving a comment to another potter of yours that you appreciate and say like, hey, I appreciate the work that went into that or because you know what's involved and like, hey, you're like, we're in this together. Like we know what you go through. So it's like, I know what that involves. Like I really, or like if I see something from, you know, Kurt and I'll be like, hey, like that glaze kind of like, he's like got a bunch of them. I'm like, that's not my favorite, but like, I really love that one. You know?
Yeah.
That one, like, I really want to get that one. Can I get that one? And I'm like, yeah.
And he's bought their pots too. Like, that's also a big thing, supporting your friends and supporting the people you are in, like, you admire is really important for show. It's like a good first step to being like, I have this pot of yours and it's lovely. I'd really love to talk with you someday if you had, like, if I could, you know. That's another thing we were going to talk about is how to ask.
The etiquette.
The etiquette, but social I'd really love to chat with you about this someday if you had the time. Mm-hmm. And they can either come back with, yeah, I'd love to, or they can come back with, yeah, I do consultations if you'd like. And that might spark into a friendship, but it's also a good way to find a resource resource for business is to pay somebody to give you a resource for your business. But,
Yeah, I think it's been natural, little by little. I don't think you, like I'm running a rainbow track and I'm like, how do I stay on the track? You just have to, be in it for the request has to be genuine. You have to put your work in so that you're actually like showing interest in what they're doing, as well as just open to understanding that they might not have the time or effort that you would like back in return for what you're asking.
Yeah.
But I think the words of encouragement on people's, you know, peers' posts, and I feel like a lot of the people that I like got going with was like, I'm like naturally staying around and like seeing how they're progressing as well. And we're kind of like growing together year by year.
Yeah.
I hope that's still a thing with Instagram, that people that are still early in it feel like they're not behind the game and they're too late, you know?
I think that some people, you know, in high school when you're a freshman, right? And you try to become friends with a senior and it's just not going to happen. Right. But if you become friends with another freshman, then when you're a senior, people are trying to ask you to be their friend. And I think that that's the same thing in pottery.
I love that.
I do too. I just came up with it. We'll use Kurt as an example. Kurt Hammerly started becoming popular when we were hobby potters getting or beginning our business. So when we were messaging him, he was reciprocal. He was, and I'm not saying he's not reciprocal, but like when we were messaging him, he was messaging us back and saying, oh yeah, I found out this too and I did this too. But if I was a hobby potter right now and I messaged Kurt, I think that I would feel like this guy's big.
There's no way he's going to respond. And then if he does, you'd be like, oh my God, yeah. What the hell?
But now that we have grown that relationship with him, he is a resource for us. Like we will chat and we will.
I love talking shop. And we've had him on the podcast a few times. Yeah.
And like every time I'm in Colorado visiting my parents, I go down and talk to Kurt and have a day with him. Like, you know, so we didn't automatically reach out to that person that was like way above us. I've never talked to Steven.
And it's also
before this year.
It's also like, it's also kind of a facade, right? Like it's just a number. Like if they didn't know who he was, like he's just a normal dude, right?
Yeah. So I think that
it's not. Yeah. You don't have to glorify an individual because of their Instagram number.
Right. Reach out to the people that are at an equal level for you, because then you can grow with those people.
Skill level and what the, you know, are they starting a home studio? Do they already have it? Are they in a community studio? Are they using studio glazes and they're starting to like venture out and make their own glazes? Are they, you know, maybe they hear an episode of the For Flux Sake and they're like, you know, are they ever talking about this of like absorption stuff? Like, do you know how to do that? Have you done that? Do you want to come over and we can like do absorption tests and like understand what the hell this is? And you kind of grow together, you know, hopefully you live in a place where you can have people physically in the same spot and you can do things one-on-one and just chat and those organic conversations come up and you can spitball, or you're in a car for 8 hours with four people and you can talk about stuff. Or you can do it virtually and you're like, okay, well, we're going to have a virtual coffee for an hour every Friday or every other Friday. And we just, we show up and we do it just like you want to like schedule time to go in the studio, and you're just like, okay, I'm going to do it because I committed myself. I have discipline to do it, and whatever comes of it comes of it. But
accountability buddies,
I'm not going to like just flake off because you know that you're working towards something.
Yeah. Let's talk about how to ask. If let's say you are going to message Kurt, let's talk about how to ask.
So Heidi was sharing this recently with an interaction between her and I, because I was asking about wholesale, because I was doing my first wholesale show, but it was a wholesale retail show. So it was, you know, having new customers come that were potentially interested in doing wholesale contracts with me. And I was writing a line sheet and I was like, okay, how do I did the work of like, okay, I know you need minimums, you need delivery, you need the paragraphs of like four different hot topic items. And then you're like, okay, but I know Heidi's done it a lot. So let me like reach out to her. Let me reach out to Becca, but here's my draft. Here's my first draft. It's got quite a bit of information in there. I've done what I think I can, which it was probably, I don't know, 80% of the way there anyways. Mm-hmm. And I was just proofreading it. And I reached out to her and I said, hey, Heidi, like I'm interested in, I'm doing this wholesale show. I've written up my line sheet. Here's what I'm hoping that you can have a look at it. And just give me anything that I obviously missed or I'm not thinking of. because you've done this. And if you can do that, great. If you can't, I totally understand. My thing is this weekend. And I texted her, but the same would be true for
I think you should Instagram. Email, personally. I'm an email fan.
Yeah. Depends on the person.
It depends on the person. When I first started out and I was first doing wholesale, I Rebecca Gray's Prowse's best friend, Jen, was like my idol for throwing, like where I wanted to be when I was throwing. And I sent her an email and I said, hi, like I'm new at this and I admire you. And if you have any time, at all, I was wondering if you had any good option, like good advice for who has wholesale, like how to get into wholesale. And that way, if she didn't have any good advice, it could come in an email and be almost more formal. Say like, hey, I really appreciate you like reaching out, but I don't have the time right now. Like, I can't do this. But she didn't. She came back and she had like a list of like 7 things. And that's how I learned about Etsy wholesale at the time. That's how I learned about certain things. And I was really grateful for that, you know. But I don't think that if I had done it over Instagram, it would have felt a little bit more...
It was in disingenuous.
Yeah, disingenuous. And especially, it was a little bit before Instagram was such a business tool, but...
And I think some of it today, you can put stories out and just say, hey, I'm interested in hearing about if there's anybody that has experience with this specific thing, and you can get, and I was just thinking like, okay, what if they listened to an episode where we or somebody else talked about some topic and, oh, well, I listened to an interview recently and Heidi was talking about pricing your work and, you know, I've been struggling with that. So like, did you listen to that? Did you have any takeaways or like, can you listen to this and then we can talk about it and we can talk through like how we're thinking about it as well. And you kind of give them a resource to do some research or look into, and then you can come back together and figure it out together sort of.
Mm-hmm. And if you, right. And also on top of that, if you feel like if you're looking for information that you feel is important, like you need it, right? Offer to pay them and you don't have to pay or you don't have to offer much, but it's like, I'm at the Tills of Killen in Utah right now. And Joe, he has like the paint your own pottery studio. And if somebody drops something on the ground and they offer to pay, he's like, no, 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 it's fine. Like it's free. But if they don't offer to pay, he's making them pay. Okay. So it's like that. If you show them some sort of kindness, hey, you should expect them to take it, but if they don't, they know that you value them, you know? Like, but if you're like, hey, what glaze did you use on that pot yesterday? That's so cool. I love your stuff, by the way. F you.
Yeah, that's a...
Like, not really, but like, I don't want to tell you now, you know?
Yeah. I think one other note that I was writing about, like, if you go to your other shows recent, like close to you, I think it's always good to make rounds and see the peers of yours. If you know, and if you admire something they're doing and you purchase a pot from them and, you know, want to connect further, not monopolize their time at the booth, but, you know, make some connection with them and maybe they're another resource for you. And it could be that they're in like Indy 2 hours away, but you can, from me at least, and, you know, maybe you have a new friend in Indy. And you can, you know, if you're in town, you can have a drink with them or coffee with them or whatever. So you can catch up and see what's going on. You know, how are you planning for your year ahead? What shows are you doing? What are you thinking about? I'm thinking about maybe some shows coming up. I don't really know the market and here. Like, do you have recommendations here? I think that's a good way to get a face-to-face with somebody, because through social media, it can feel like everybody's the same. It's hard to like get a judge of like, okay, why are they asking me this? And like, what's their angle? Or, you know, it just can feel more like you're in the moment and you're just chatting with them, and something can form of it or nothing can form of it. Like, maybe you just don't gel with them. You're like, oh, they're different than like what I expected, or
that's, you know, the whatever. Bummerest bummer, isn't it? Like when you meet your hero and they're awful. What? You're like, God damn it. I really wanted to talk to you, but you're kind of terrible.
And we also mentioned this in the car. We were talking about, Jessica mentioned this. She was saying there's a vast amount of information out there, and we kind of hear it. We've probably heard the same thing multiple times, but
oh, yeah.
At some point you're only accepting of the thing that's in front of you. Like, you're only looking for answers of the thing that's in front of you. And maybe you've come across an answer to something that you're going to experience a year down the road, but you're not at that point in your life, in your business or whatever, to be able to receive that answer in the time that you hear it. So, you know, you might need to come across it way later, and it's like, okay, like, that's exactly what I need to do. And it's just so obvious. The example was I need to open a separate business, a separate account. It doesn't have to be a business account, but a bank account that's separate for my business so that everything is siloed in one place.
And Ryan,
it sounds so easy enough. And I'm like, why did it take you to listen to the Rebecca interview?
It's like, we've said that like,
to hear that
times.
Because I feel like we've said that a bunch of times. And I was like, oh, well, we talked about that with the small business taxes with Jamie Boyack. We did that back in the day. Like, we talked about that. Definitely. She told us that. I remember that.
Yeah. And she was like, well, I didn't
need
it then.
She was like, oh, well, I don't remember that. And I was like, she was like, but it just like in the moment, you know, you run into it and you're like, how do I organize this shit? And she's like, oh, I just need like a separate account. And that sparked it. Yeah. It's like, oh, that seems obvious, but it makes me feel better that we can repeat ourselves and people are going to accept it at different points because people find the podcast at different points too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was just going to say something. I forgot it.
I always know your go-to statement is for sure.
For sure.
Does anybody else notice that?
Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, I think that also, okay, you know, when you're young and when you're in college and stuff like that, old people give you, I mean old in the sense of people that are older in the craft, I suppose, give you advice and you're like, shut up. Like, I don't need your advice. But, and I agree. I agree, you should have your own voice. But I think it's good to file those things away. You know, you don't have to be like, oh, wow, thank you for your advice. I love that so much. You can be like, okay, thanks. And then, but someday that is going to come back to you and you're going to be like, oh.
I've had that. I can share that. The Tim C interview, we were talking with him about small things, and we were talking about what comes of shot glasses or spoon rests. You know, what is the benefit of having those items in your shows or whatever? So it's kind of like, you know, at what point are you, it's like, it's a little bit like, fuck you. Like, I can make a bunch and I can make them efficiently and I can sell a bunch. Like,
and
what's wrong with
cheap.
That?
Sell for cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, like, yeah, I'll take it. And then you kind of store it. And then at some point, I'm like,
what did he tell you? What was the advice he gave you?
Well, he was kind of like, where does that go?
Where's the value of that?
Where's the value of that? You know, you're just kind of like a machine at that point. You're just doing the thing to do the thing because it can sell. And like, what's the next step after the spoon rest? Like, is that going anywhere? Can you evolve from that? And I kind of use it as, okay, this is, you know, it's a bread and butter item. I think this shot glass was more what I took away from it was that, okay, I'm not going to take those to and from shows because my reasoning was people clog up the booth to buy a $10 shot glass and they're blocking potential opportunities for other people to buy. And some people are so indecisive and I've got 50 shot glasses out there. Everyone's a little different. They're different colors and they're like, okay, I don't know which one I want. And they end up getting one or three or whatever and they spend $30 and, you know, and also it's just like cumbersome. You take it back and forth and you got to manage inventory online and on in person and stuff. So it was like, for me, it made sense to just, okay, you know what? I didn't take shot glasses to any shows last year and it was fine.
Yeah.
I sold them online. I keep up with the inventory. I just have one shelf of it. I can keep up with it and also sell them to wholesale. Like the money that I'm leaving on the table is worth it for me because I get to make other things and I don't have to, it's not even in my mind to think about managing stock and taking stuff to and from the shows for the shot glasses. And they're also low price items. Like if I can get people to appreciate, and now the base price item would be a spoon rest for me, and that's like $20. And I still think that's very doable for a lot of customers. And that's like a good entry point for people. Like everybody can find a use for that. I just feel like it's, I don't know that he was dropping a breadcrumb in me, I think.
Yeah.
Of like deciding. For sure.
Yeah. I also have something, I'm changing the subject kind of, but, I was just thinking about how it's interesting how people approach Enseca specifically. So me and Ryan, we come to Enseca not to go to any of these talks. I haven't been to one. I like tried to go to one and I got bored and I left. And not really. There was a lot of people too. But and some people go to Enseca to go to the talks. There's two very separate people. And I think that you really need to think about what you're coming to a space like this for. For instance, before this talk, the reason why we only had 15 minutes like of being here beforehand was because we went to every single person that we were like, hey, maybe we want to do a sponsorship with these people. We networked all the way around the floor tonight to this morning and didn't even hit the people that we like all of them. And that is really important for us. Okay. So you need to find what's really important for you in this space. So if you're trying to grow your business, if you're trying to grow your, so if you're
trying to find a new technique that you're like, I feel stuck. I don't know what I want to do. Right. Like maybe watching somebody do their technique and seeing the decision making they're doing along the way is going to spark some little nugget in you to be like, I want to try that.
So if you're a hobby potter and you're like, I really need to sell my stuff, but I really want to see how this person does handles, how this person approaches this. Go to the talks. If you're a business person that's looking to like increase, you're looking to talk to people like maybe you want to see if Mud Tools want to work with you, or maybe you want to like connect. Like this is the perfect opportunity for you to talk to people at Brent, at Speedball, at Mud Tools, at all of these places because they are so personable and they're so in their element right now. And that like Enseca is a huge tool for you to use as a business. It's a resource.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, just tying it back. this is a huge, huge thing. We grow every single year we come here because of this conference. And if we don't come here, we don't grow in certain ways.
Yeah.
And
I think it's more personal to the person.
It is more personal.
The people to people interaction. Yeah.
Like people we see, like you, like, so, you know, people I talk to every day on the internet, essentially, and have like grown accustomed to seeing in my DMs. I get to see them. I get to talk to them. And that means that now that we've made this connection, it is without a doubt, if they come to me and say, hey, I got this question. No problem. Let's talk it out. Let's have a call. Let's do a video chat. Like,
you got that rapport started
already.
Yeah.
And so I think even like, yeah. So really decide. And I mean, most of you are here probably because of the name, I don't know, like because of the topic. So I would assume that most of you are here for business or do a business. So I am so freaking excited to tell you guys that while we were at Enseca, we were talking to the LNL peeps, Dimitri, and they told us that a brand new tiny kiln is coming onto the market, and I can't really describe to you how excited I am about this. I'm so excited. It's going to be 8 inches by 8 inches on the inside, 9 inches tall, which the current one that I have that is not made by LNL, which I wish it would, was because I wish I had an LNL kiln, which I will because I'm going to have this kiln anyway, so mine right now is 4.5 inches tall. This one's going to be 9 inches tall though. So that gives you like
twice the amount of space, which is so exciting. It's 12.5 amps, which means that, or volts, which means that it's like typically you have a 15 amp plug and this one's 12.5, so it will never like trip a breaker, which mine has when it's like not plugged into the right, you know, plug or something like that. So that means you can plug it into literally any plug in your house, apartment, house, shed. Fuck. I think you could probably even plug it into a really nice power station. It pulls 1500 watts an hour, I believe, but that doesn't mean it pulls it all at once. So anyway, more to come on how much solar you would need to run it. But it is, I think it's 15 by 15 by 18 tall. There is a separate Genesis controller. So it's not the three button controller. It's an actual Genesis controller. And like, just so excited about that. And everything kind of like comes apart so you can move it if you need to. But obviously a lot of people will just be putting it in their location and keeping it. But for me, it's going to be really exciting. So it's going to be about $1,600. It's a little bit more. It's on their website now. If you're interested in it, look at it on the website. There's some really good specs. It's going to be such a solid kiln. If you have been like itching to get a kiln, you don't want to spend $3,000, but you could fire like 8 cups a week, this is, or even once a day, literally, this is perfect for you. Go look at hotkilns.com for all the information, because it's going to be great. And I'm just so excited for you guys to see it. It's going to be so good. So good, guys. So freaking good. Anyway, my dreams have come true. So, yep.
Yeah. It's 137. We had one point about outsourcing, but I don't know that I want to talk about outsourcing.
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay. Do we want to do questions?
Like, do we have a lot of questions?
Wait, I feel like we should.
Yeah. Do we have a lot of questions, or should we keep talking until the 45?
She looked like she was about to raise her hand.
Like, okay.
Right here in front.
Yeah, let's just do questions, and then we can go.
Ooh. Hello.
Hello.
I'm Jenna.
Jenna.
From Level Studio Arts. My question is, so I have two very, very different types of work that I create, and I'm constantly like reestablishing what it's going to look like and changing it and evolving my work. So it's almost like, from your statement, I have like my basic pottery, that I could go to a show, they could sell out, fantastic. But if I want like my pottery that is like my art,
right,
that I have a story behind or anything like that, that ain't selling at shows.
Right.
So I guess my question is, should I have these two different setups of work? Should I combine the two together? Should I go gallery route? Should I have both? Like, thoughts, opinions?
I have a question first before we kind of dive into it. How do you feel about each one of them? Is there one that you clearly like more? Is there one that you're doing because you're passionate about it? And is there one you're doing because you have to make money?
Exactly that.
Okay, that's the case?
Yep.
Okay.
So long term, you would love to just sustain yourself on the art?
Yes.
Over the basic pots?
Correct.
Quarter correct. Pot.
Yeah.
I think that I'm going to hit this one.
Go.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to hit it?
Go.
Okay. Oh, but we can both go for it. But as you said, I'm doing the exact same thing. And I have done the exact same thing, and it's hard as fuck.
Yep.
Personally, I consistently have said recently that I am a fine art booth at a farmer's market show. Okay? Because that's actually literally what's happening. The only show that I'm doing is at a farmer's market right now. So, I think over the past couple of years, just from a feeling perspective, I don't have the information for you for the other stuff, but it's been extremely satisfying to do the stuff that if I put it up online and I don't sell anything, I'm not really upset about it. And like those dominoes have been really a passion project for me. And it is still, but I'm still really struggling mentally. Okay. And
you're making it for yourself, not for the customer, but it's also, yeah, you know that it's
a limitation, but it's going to take time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, if you can find something that's very basic to hold you through that time, like how I'm doing the jewelry, that's kind of just like very basic, and then doing the fancy shit, I think that's the most sustainable way personally. But
kind of wean yourself off of it.
But you do need friends that can be there for you, because I have been in a pretty deep state of depression through this, just because it's been really hard to have the failure, not the failure, but like the rejection, mm-hmm, almost of it. And even though I know it's worth it, it's just going to take some time. So, but I wouldn't have told you that answer 3 years ago also, just so you know. So I would have been like, just keep grinding. It's fine. Mm-hmm. You know? And like, fuck art. And like, so, but yeah, it's really hard to do that. And I have one friend that's like, hey, you need to take your stuff to the galleries up front and show them your earrings. They'll buy them on the spot. And she's like, really, she like really tries to get me into good shows, into nice shows. And I need her, mm-hmm, in my life, because then I'll actually do it. Otherwise I've been like, mm-hmm, not doing it, you know? Yeah. So
you kind of know what needs to be done, but you don't necessarily have the drive to do the legwork to reach out to galleries, yeah, and be like, hey, I've got this option. I'd love to consign, or I love the wholesale. Do you, yeah, do that? Here's my work. Here's the reason I like, it takes a lot of energy to do that.
I think
a lot of research.
This is a time also in your life that you really need to heavily rely on your friends, if that makes sense, or your support group that you have, and be upfront and honest with them and say like, I'm going to go through this and I have a goal. This is my goal.
Yeah. I was going to say similar, like wean off of it little by little. Like my Sgraffito work is only like, I might post more about that because it's more interesting and passionate to me, as well as it's more eye catching. But honestly, like 75% of my business revenue is probably from the production work. It's not the Sgraffito work. But also I realized if my whole body of work was Sgraffito work, my body would not be able to handle, my hands could not handle the carving, and mm-hmm, Erica could not, you know, she can't keep up with the like underglazing every single pot that needs to be underglazed, because I don't do any of that.
Yeah.
You know, can we physically handle that, as well as do I have the market to actually sell all of that to customers? I don't currently have that. I'm growing it little by little by little. And then I'm realizing like, okay, I would love to do the carved mugs and the carved bottles, but I realized for every carved mug I sell 10 carved bottles. So like, hey, shit, I can crank out a bottle in 3 minutes on the wheel. I don't have to put a handle on it. Like, that's great. I'm just going to do that. And it costs $5 less right now. Like, people are going to buy those way more. So like, if I don't have to make mugs, like, that's great. Maybe this is my shoe in to making forms that are simpler, but the graphic design part of it carries it. And also it's more enjoyable to make because it's less time consuming.
I would also say like a healthy ratio too. Like if you are doing like a shitty show or, you know, farmer's market or whatever like that, having a healthy ratio of like fancy pots to shitty pots is really like good to have.
Get some, right, different price points
like
too.
Like 20 to 80. And then like, you know, maybe if you're at a fancier show, 80 to 20, like, you know, you're kind of like, or if you're at a really fancy show, just go all out. But having that like, almost like having a safety net is a really good feeling, but it also gets people really interested in your work and like gets people.
I think I've,
but that could be wrong too.
I think the idea I was kind of spitballing as well at one point was like making the basic work can carry you and it gives you a longer runway so that as you lift off to the other stuff, it's not such a drastic change. It's not like stopping tomorrow and starting on the other body of work. I just feel like that's so risky and I'm very risk averse, so I wouldn't do that. But you know, I think it gives you that like stockpile of savings and the business is stable and it gives you reliability. And if you're like happy enough making it and you can make money with it and you can also like increase your prices on it so that you don't have to kill your body to keep up with the demand.
Oh, I have another question. Is this your full-time gig or are you part-time?
Part-time.
Oh, then just go for it.
Oh, the part-time also helps too.
I'd love to be full-time, but yeah.
Yeah, that's if it's not, if also, I guess we were just approaching that as a full-time situation.
I would apply that to part-time too.
Well, okay. Your part-time's like a fucking full-time.
Like, but the same, like you can experiment with it part-time because the risk is not as high.
The risk is not as high, but like if you're not financially dependent on it too, and you feel like you're over the other stuff, and if you keep doing it and you're going to burn out, go the other way. Okay. That's what I would say.
And then are you mentally strong enough to go through those, like, how the hell do I sell this very art level work that is like gallery level? And maybe it's galleries. Maybe that makes most sense. Like your stuff looks better on a pedestal. And it makes the most sense for that.
I think the best, also the best learning experience you could probably have is spending the money and applying to one of those fancy shows and just going all in for one time, more as a research and development.
When you say show, do you mean an like exhibition or do you mean, like an art show? Fancy art show.
Yeah, like a fancy art show. Like, I don't know, where do you live?
Massachusetts.
So like, apply to the Smithsonian show. Apply to like different shows that are out there that are close to you that are like maybe $800 to apply and like save up for it, but like do it. And then while you're there, walk around and look around and see what people are doing and ask people questions. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. There's a couple right here.
Oh no.
And one on that side.
You guys didn't say you were going to have questions and then you all.
Good thing we saved it. We got 13 minutes. So.
Oh, we got 13. Okay.
Hi. So we're all from Berry College in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious, like when you're starting out your business or when you guys specifically started your businesses, what was the hardest lesson that you learned?
The hardest lesson.
To have good weights on your tent. I'm sorry, but that really was the hardest lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you my hardest, my actual hardest.
Yeah, I mean, I think my standards of the quality of pot that, like, I save every single piece that I make. like, I find it hard to just throw things away. So at some point, I will test it and stuff. But I don't know if it's a lesson, though. A hard lesson to be like, you don't have to be
Ryan's
so attached to every single
life.
Every single pot. But you see the slow evolution over time, but. I don't know. I feel like it might have a comeback to me kind
of. Okay, I'll talk because I got a lot of those.
All right.
Okay, there's a couple ones. He actually has done really well. I say that he's been successful his whole life, but he's like really calculated, so he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. My biggest lesson was to I unfortunately and fortunately for me, my first contract was with Starbucks. And so my biggest lesson was that I need to have a contract when I get into big corporation situations. I need to hold my ground. And also, like, you have to realize that the people you're working with are also humans. Like, even if you're working with Starbucks, you're still working with somebody who lives in a regular house, goes to job every, like, a regular job every day, and they don't know anything and you don't know anything. That's a big, big thing. So I think that that was one of the biggest lessons that I fortunately learned quickly. And also, I think the very first show that I did, like really, truly the very first show that I did, was like in this, it was in a convention center in the Tacoma Dome in Washington. And it was like $800 for the booth. It was not the show I should be doing. And it was awful. And I needed to start small, but that, what that did for me was it showed me like what I actually need, like any shelves.
Were you right in the fire?
Yeah. Like put you, so you can do, you can go through life two different ways. You can go straight into the fire, which is usually unfortunately how that happens to me, or you can calculate and move through life. So, So like, that's probably what I would say, start slow and move up. And also, honestly, though, have the right weights on your tents. Because I don't know, you probably don't know, but my very first show, my very first outdoor show, I lost 90% of my product because my tent flew away and my shelves broke. So because of the wind. So
and she had to make
and it was on Mother's
for
Day
next, for the next weekend. She had to make all the product to fill her booth the next weekend.
For the next booth. And so and I had a really great support system, so they helped me out. But I remember texting my mom being like, "Happy Mother's Day! All my shit broke." So yeah.
There's one right here.
Hey, so I'm also a college student.
Hi.
How do you, I'm not in a business yet, and I'm not sure, how do you get from my friends and my family support me and love me to I want strangers to like my work? I think that, like, how do you get from point A to point B, like, point A to point B, and getting from, like, all right, I have this really great following and support system of my family and friends, but I don't want them to just be buying my work because right. they love me and they like me. I want strangers to like it too. Like, how do you get there?
I think you have to be vulnerable and be willing to sign up for shows and getting in front of people and just be open that like something positive is going to come from it. Yeah. And just go in with a positive mind so that you know what you hope you're going to get from it. And you know that it's going to like, you're going to be awkward. You're not going to know how to talk to people. You're not going to know how to display your work in the best way it should be. You don't know if the pieces they're going to sell or if they're the pieces that people even want. But I think that's the best way to just organically grow it very slowly.
Yeah.
That would be my suggestion.
I would say, where are you?
App State.
What?
App State.
Sorry, North Carolina, I think, right? That's Boone, North Carolina.
Oh, well, the pottery capital of the world. I would say start at a farmer's market. Okay. I know that seems really simple, but if you can find something that's $25 to set up, if you show up with a table,
a lot of them are low commitment. Like you can contact them within a week or so. I mean, Becca's probably contacted them like 2 days before.
Oh, for sure. But if you show up with like a table that doesn't even have a tablecloth on it, they're like, eh, it's fine.
And honestly, like, if it's a beautiful day, you don't even need a tent.
Yeah, because that'll slowly, especially since you're still in school, that'll slowly like build up your confidence into selling things, and then you can start like moving towards things.
I think too big, too fast, where like I've heard of my friends who sell at farmers markets like almost exclusively, and they're like, well, I have insurance with these, like, because some places require insurance for farmers markets and some places require certain colored tents. And I was like, I don't really have money to start there. I don't know how to start in that sense.
Yeah.
You could also borrow some of those materials from people that hopefully you've made some connections of, like, hey, my professor, do you have a white tent that I can use on Saturday for 4 hours?
Yeah.
And I'll bring it back on Monday.
Yeah. There's places out there that you don't have to have that stuff.
Okay.
And if you do, you can buy a 1 day insurance and see how it goes.
ACT insurance is a good single day option.
ACE insurance, right?
I did not know 1 day insurances existed.
Oh, yeah.
ACT insurance is a thing, yeah.
1 day insurance for shows exists, by the way. And it's cheap. But most places don't offer you that. But do buy good weights.
Or don't need the tent at all if it's beautiful.
Thank you.
There's one on the far side over here.
Oh, wait for the mic.
Yeah. She's saying don't quit. Be persistent. Yes, like, keep going. Don't get discouraged because you don't sell anything that one day. Like,
the first time you go is going to suck. But I'm sorry if I missed this. I missed the first part. But I was wondering if you had any information about, like, the sustainability of hiring people, like trying to get help in your studio to help you produce more. But at the same time, you're the outlay for all that. I don't know if you guys work with that at all. Hmm.
I've paid assistants over the years. Have you had some assistants?
I mean, I've had employees.
Yeah, I think the way that I approach it, I mean, I'm not having assistants doing ungodly number of hours, like they're working 20 hours a week or anything like that. Like, Erica works 4 hours minimum, maximum 8 hours. And I produce thousands of pots a year. She's right in the middle. You can talk to her.
Well, yeah, we're still talking, but I just wanted to show
Yeah, the way I do it is I prioritize what effort my time needs to be. Like, I have a limited number of time to do what I do. So my value is in doing the things that I can only do. And that, like, keeps the standard of my product where it is So the easy things off the list are prep clay. Somebody else prep clay for me. I haven't prepped clay in like 3 years, 4 years. I don't know.
That's why he doesn't have carpal tunnel.
I still feel it a little bit in my hands from throwing, but because I'm very tight. And then, you know, like making glazes. Obviously, that's a risk because somebody fucks up a bucket of glaze. It's happened.
That's happened to me, but it turned into a great glaze.
But, like, you can grow through that, right? You can hopefully risk, and it's okay. But if you're making it for a whole community studio and you ruin shelves and glaze and everything, like, but I'm very calculated in, like, testing it and, you know, here's the recipe. Can you follow the recipe? Maybe walk. It feels so, you know, like you're babying them because you're walking through it so simply. But if you have somebody that you trust that is detailed enough and you trust them to do that. But I've also had people do that. And then I'm like, you know what? I might not want you to do that. And I either, you know, I've had two assistants at one point at the same time because I didn't want to say no to one of them. And we made it work. And you pick and choose what skills make sense for those people. And, you know, maybe some people are good at just, you know, prepping clay or stamping boxes with your branding or bags. Or my wife packs a lot of my pots to go out now. So pack and ship.
I
think you just have to tailor it to what their skills are. And it's really hard to find the right people too.
I think that when I was talking to Kelly over at Speedball about having employees and stuff kind of, and she said that, you know, it really matters if they're willing to work hard and if they have a good personality and if they're good humans. And
a lot of things are trainable.
After that, everything can be trained, you know? And so I think that those, and coming from like hiring people and managing people, that's very true. And so, and I don't, like, it depends on how you get those people from, like,
and it could be somebody that's like, they just want a side thing to get themselves out of
something
they're
doing,
and they just want to do something for 3 hours a week or 4 hours a week, and they just want.
Reach out to colleges, see if they have anybody. And because colleges have a lot of programs for that type of stuff. But I think that.
They don't even have clay. They don't even need clay experience in some.
Yeah,
some
really,
of these aspects,
truly not. So. When Graves Co. was hiring people, they didn't want you to have clay experience because once we did, they were like, well, I can do this. And we're like, we don't want you to do that. We would like you to do it our way, you know? And we would tell them, we need you to act like you know nothing about clay right now while I train you in this. And they're like, well, what if I do this? I don't want you to do that, you know? And so I think it's really good to actually have somebody that doesn't. And, but really look at their personality and their work ethic.
Yeah, I think some people have done little trial periods where you do it for a week or 7 day period or 2 week period and you kind of try it out and say, I will pay you for the trial period. This is what we're committing to for now. And then we'll kind of reassess and see, you know, where your skills lie and if I feel like you're a good fit for this or not.
Yeah.
That might give you an out as well. Cause otherwise
it's, that helped.
You kind of got to fire quickly otherwise. And it's tough to fire. I mean, I've never had to do that, but
yeah. Well, okay. We have 2 minutes, so we're
somebody back there.
Hi there. Hi. I want to ask, how do you define success for yourself as an artist? Like, what's your maybe like your I made it moment when you were like, finally, I'm a successful artist? I just want to ask because like I have work for sale here in the gallery, and I still question like, oh, am I an artist now? Did I make it? Am I that guy because I'm selling here in the Expo Center? Or, you know, I still question it even though I'm making all these steps in my career.
Do we? Before I answer that, do we have anybody after us? Like, what's...
Yeah, if you can wrap up in the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
5 minutes, okay. For me, just short and sweet, what I think of as success, I think that it matters not what any other people think of you. What you feel like your success is matters. For me, that looks like me paying my car bill or my house payment every month. That's what that looks like. And for me to live, I will be successful if I make $30,000, you know, and if I like the stuff that I'm working with. Mm-hmm. I think that you are not successful if you're working yourself too hard and you end up burning out. That's what I don't think is successful. But I think that success in our society is extremely overrated. And whatever you're doing to get by and to be the best person that you can be is what, like it's great that you have stuff in the gallery. It's also great if you don't, you know? And like, but if you're selling and you're making and you're happy, that's the three things that I think you need.
Yeah. I think it's best to gauge yourself based on where you were yesterday. Are you moving in a direction that you want to be moving in? Are you progressing? Are you challenging yourself? And do you feel like, yeah, I think it all goes back to you. Like, I don't think other people should define whether you're successful or not. It's up to you. Are you, you know, you apply to shows and you don't get it. Like, I keep getting denied from this one show like over and over. And I'm like, I'm going to persist. I'm going to get in this fucking show.
This year he was like, got denied again. He didn't even have to say the show. But
yeah, I'm like, it's a personal challenge for me. And yeah. I think you have to set those goals for yourself and push yourself. And I think the goalpost is going to change. Like, the success for you might have been to get in that exhibition and you got it. Okay, what's next?
Yeah, what's next?
What are you going to do next?
It's
what
such
do you want to do next?
Answer and question, right? Because you're like,
and you get to decide. You get to decide, okay, my next thing could be a month from now or it could be a year from now. My goal is this thing that I would like to get a year from now. But you don't have to have it so tied to it.
I'm going to end with one thing that my mom always says. She says, and I think this applies to everything in life. She says, because I'm always like, I don't know if I can ask that person if I can stay at their house. And she says, if somebody asked you if you could stay at if they could stay at your house, would you say yes? And I'm like, oh, yes, absolutely. Why would you assume anything else from somebody else? And I think you need it. Like, we need to ask ourselves, like, if somebody came up to us and said, bro, I just got into this gallery, you'd be like, wow, that's freaking cool. Why would you assume anything else for yourself? Right? Yeah. Boom.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy